the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
We've made it to hour number four of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. A lot coming your way between now and the end of the program. Mike Barnett joins us to talk Major League Baseball, especially the Astros scandal, and, of course, a practice report with Eric Kane. Right now, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6.
We're going to have a NASCAR question for you, and if you can answer it, you are going to win tickets to Def Leppard and ZZ Top 2020 Vision Tour. That's coming to Thompson Bowling Arena September the 25th. If you answer the trivia question, you get two tickets to that show. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. So that's what's up for grabs if you can answer this trivia question. Daytona 500, before Denny Hamlin won back-to-back titles at the Daytona 500, who was the last repeat winner at Daytona? Denny Hamlin won back-to-back Daytona 500s. Before that, who was the last repeat winner at the Daytona 500?
656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Let's start with Danny. Hello, Danny.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, great, Danny. Hope you are, too.
I'll be there if I can get this. I think that was Dale Earnhardt.
Not Dale Earnhardt. Good try, though.
All right, thank you.
Danny, we sure do appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to Cornelius. You're on Sports Talk. Hello.
Yes, sir. I'm going to go back a few years. I'm going to say Dale Jarrett.
It's not Dale Jarrett. That's a good guess, but it's not Dale Jarrett.
Oh, gosh.
Well, we sure do appreciate it.
Long time no see.
Well, good to see you. Good to hear from you. Have a great night. Let's go next to Eddie. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Man, I just read this yesterday Monday after the race, and I forgot it. I'm just going to go with Harvick. I know it's not it.
No, it's not. Yeah. Thank you.
See you. Have a good day.
All right, Eddie. Thank you. Have a great night. Chris joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing well. And you?
Okay. I wish I'd have paid a little better attention during the broadcast at the end, though, because I remember him showing it. And I know one of the names, but I think it's not the most recent. Do you get a half credit?
you get one ticket. No, I'm just kidding.
One's fine. It's just one me. I'm going to go with the one that I know, but I'm afraid there's been one more recent. Cale Yarbrough.
Not Cale Yarbrough. There has been one more recent.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm. Chris, we sure do appreciate it. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's an impressive list of those that have been able to win back-to-back, but you're right, there's one in between. Repeat the question, if you would.
Before Denny Hamlin won the Daytona 500 back-to-back, who was the previous repeat winner of Daytona 500?
656-9900, 656-9900. Charlie joins us next. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
How about Sterling Marlin?
There you go. How about you? Correct. That's it. Sterling Marlin, 94-95, repeat winner, Daytona 500. We had an earlier guest of Cale Yarbrough. Yarbrough's won it four times, and then there's a guy named Richard Petty who's won it seven. But the last repeat winner until Denny Hamlin was Sterling Marlin. So congratulations, Charlie. You have won two tickets to see Def Leppard and ZZ Top, the 2020 Vision Tour, coming to Thompson Bowling Arena September the 25th. Congratulations to you.
All
we're
right.
Going to put you on hold and get those tickets to you, okay?
Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
All right. Way to go, Charlie. And that takes care of the Sports Fix at 6. And there was so much concern, and rightly so, with just the horrific accident that Ryan Newman was involved in, that the celebration for Denny Hamlin kind of got lost in the shuffle. And in fact, he was apologetic because he's celebrating with his team. And then they find out exactly how serious the wreck was, because he said all of that was behind him. It's not like there's a great amount of communication that they're actually privy to at that point in time. So they went from celebrating what was joining very elite company and just becoming the fourth ever to win the Daytona 500 in back-to-back years to a very subdued celebration, as well as the great concern that not only Hamlin but all drivers had for Ryan Newman.
Well, if you saw the crash, you're wondering, is this guy going to come out of this alive? Mm-hmm. And he did. He was in critical condition. He has been released from the hospital. The early reports I saw, which they may have mentioned now, but they didn't specify exactly what the injuries were. I don't know if you've seen that, John, what they are, but...
No, they've not. But today there was footage of him walking out of the hospital with his two daughters. And it's just amazing. That's less than 48 hours after the accident, when it looked like you might have just witnessed the first fatality since Dale Earnhardt in regards to the Winston or NASCAR and the Monster Energy deal.
Well, it was pretty brutal. And the last lap.
Yes.
On the last lap. And
it was overtime. And so it really was something. But again, amazing the technology that's now in place, because I don't think there's any question that it saved his life.
When I was in Arizona, the race occurred. And so the first news I saw was about the Ryan Newman accident, and it didn't even say who the winner was.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew it was a serious accident if they're talking about that first instead of the winner. But anyway, it sounds like really good news that he is out of the hospital.
Yes. And the thing is, it didn't even look like he was limping. I mean, it really is amazing to see that footage of him walking out of the hospital, and he's got his two daughters with him, an arm on each one, and just unbelievable that has taken place. And so... wish him the very best moving forward. And it will be interesting to see whether I don't think he'll be back behind the wheel this week, but who knows? They've got to get out to Phoenix. That's what Doc Punch was talking about on Monday, is how short this week is with how quickly they have to head west. But I do wonder when we will see Ryan Newman behind the number six car, behind the wheel of the number six car again.
That's what I'm wondering too. And obviously he's going to have to be cleared by doctors before he does that. And without knowing the injuries, and there's so much uncertainty, we have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it will be soon for his sake. And but you also wonder, is he maybe a little bit gun-shy? I'm not sure how quickly I'd want to get behind that wheel after that occurred.
True. So that we shall see from this point forward. But again, taken to the hospital on Monday, Ryan Newman walks out of the hospital today. We'll get a break. When we return, we'll be joined by Eric Kane for a Tennessee practice report. That's next as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
When special guests call in to 99.1 The Sports Animal, you hear them on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, stanleyfence.com.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Time now for a Tennessee practice report. It's brought to you by Pools by Heritage, as we get to say hello to Eric Kane. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Doing well, Tennessee. Doing well as well. Nearly gave that one away last night in the last couple of minutes. Jordan Bowden went to the free throw line with the Tennessee leading by two, knocked down a pair of critical free throws, and the ball was able to pull out a 65-61 win, where they trailed in the ball game at certain points in times, but it was when Tennessee needed to improve to 7-6 in SEC play, 15-11 overall. John Fulkerson, a very slow first half, a finish with a team high 17 points, along with Jordan Bowden, who had 14, I believe, in the first half. He also finished with 17 points as well. The Volunteers shot 42% from the field, shot 11 three-pointers in the first half, slowed things down, only had 16 attempts from behind the arc in the ball game. Weren't much successful in that regard, 4-16, but the free throws did improve. The Volunteers made 86% of their free throws. So Tennessee, again, the same story. It was a game where turnovers, 15 of which for the Volunteers, kept Vanderbilt in the ball game, and Rick Barnes at halftime, and this is him post-game, not happy with the turnovers, and said he had to call in some reinforcements to speak with the team after the game. This is Rick Barnes post-game last night after Tennessee's victory over Vanderbilt.
That's two games in a row we've gotten 10 turnovers from a point guard and a post players, and those two guys combined with it. You can't do it. You can't. And you just keep digging yourself a hole to where you almost have to be perfect. And nobody thinks you can play this game perfectly. And I am frustrated because I think we're better than what I think we should be better than what other people might think. And we're not going to lower our standard. You know, I had Admiral Schofield and Lamonte both talk to him after tonight because I was upset at halftime. I was upset at the end of the game. And I thought those guys hit him with some good things. And it's important that they understand it and understand that they've got to do it now. And they were in the same situation as Admiral and those guys were when they were sophomores. And they went through it. They found a way to break through. This team's got to find a way to break through.
Again, that was Rick Barnes post-game last night talking about the turnovers. And Tennessee turned it over again 15 times. Vanderbilt scored 17 points off those turnovers. Two more quick notes. E. Pons had extended his block streak to at least one block in every single game. He played a block last night as well. And it was a career game for Jordan Wright of Vanderbilt. Came off the bench to score 23 points. I believe his previous career high was only 11. So, the turnovers, good bench play from Vanderbilt, a reason why this game came down to the wire last night inside Thompson Bowling Arena.
Eric, why do you think Fulkerson got off to a slow start? He didn't score a field goal until less than 10 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, sometimes it takes him just a little while to get going, and I think when he is attacking the other teams, really the opposition, and trying to get them in foul trouble by attacking the lane and going right at him, I think that's when he's at his best. And Jerry Stackhouse said post-game, when we were at halftime, and we saw Fulkerson, and he really hadn't got on of late, but we knew he was coming. And I think that's kind of Fulkerson's best game. But you've seen it a couple times this year to where he'll turn it on in the second half after a slow half, or I believe it was against Ole Miss earlier this season when he scored 16 points in the first half. He's able to turn that switch very, very quickly. And he's very efficient from the field. He's now is one of the highest field goal percentages on the team. And so I think Tennessee needs to take advantage of that. But I think when Fulkerson is at his best, is when he's specifically attacking the opposition's post players and trying to get them into foul trouble.
I thought another key for Tennessee, they held Scottie Pippen without a field goal, and he made a couple of free throws, and I think it was less than a minute left in the game when he did that. That was a really strong defensive effort against one of Vanderbilt's better players.
Yeah, Scottie Pippen and Saban Lee have really been the two catalysts ever since Naismith went out earlier in January. Scottie Pippen Jr., had a streak of scoring in double figures and 10-plus ball games earlier when Tennessee faced Vanderbilt. And he's been a guy, he's been a consistent contributor for Vanderbilt and a reason why they're playing much better basketball of late. But last night, only 21 minutes of game action, scored 2 points. You mentioned it, that came out of a free throw attempt. He was 0-for-4 from the field, and he had 4 fouls. So that's kind of the formula there. Get one of their best players in foul trouble, you see his minutes diminish. And Tennessee was able to work that to its advantage. Now, it didn't much help that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Jordan Wright came off the bench and just went off and had a career game. But, again, I think Tennessee did a really nice job game planning and executing against Scottie Pippen Jr.
Josiah Jordan James played less than 13 minutes. Now, I know he had 4 fouls, but do you think he is still recovering from the groin injury that sidelined him for a few games?
Oh, no doubt about it. Josiah Jordan James has not been healthy all season long. He missed the majority of preseason coming up. He played in that exhibition game, but really wasn't as right for Tennessee. And he hasn't been 100% all year long. And so what he's been able to do and the progress he's been able to make, despite playing hurt all year, has been pretty good to see. But it's just a matter of getting reps in it and continuing to try to get healthy and healthy. When he's right, he's playing a whole lot more than 13 minutes of ball game. And again, you're right, he was in foul trouble. He had 4 fouls early in the second half, and so that is a factor. But Josiah Jordan James certainly is hurt, and I don't think it's going to be one of those things that gets fully healthy until after the season when he can rest it completely. So I think the best that you'll see from Josiah Jordan James is to come, considering the injuries he's been dealing with.
And Tennessee really hits an incredibly difficult stretch. They go to Auburn, they go to Arkansas, they host Florida, they go to Kentucky, then they host Auburn again. That is going to be very challenging for this basketball team.
It really is, and that's what makes these games against Vanderbilt, that's what makes these games against, previous weeks, Mississippi State and everything like that, that much more critical. You needed those games. Tennessee unfortunately dropped one against South Carolina on Saturday as well, because you've got the top tier of the SEC left. Again, you just mentioned two games against Vanderbilt, a game against Kentucky, a game against Florida, another game against Arkansas. And, you know, Tennessee could lose all those games. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Tennessee's going to go over during that stretch, but a huge stretch here. And Tennessee's sitting at only a 7-6 record. And potentially this could be a stretch of basketball to where Tennessee's going from around fourth or fifth in the standings in the SEC to, you know, down to eighth or ninth if things don't go their way. So a critical game of basketball coming up. Rick Barnes will say just take it game by game and continue to concentrate on what he's teaching these players. Just take it one game at a time. Minimize the turnovers, of course, and see where it comes out. But certainly this stretch that we've all kind of been looking towards all – you know, SEC season is finally here for Tennessee, and the Volunteers are going to have to come out on top if they want to get a favorable seeding for the SEC tournament.
Any other news or notes?
Well, that's about it. Jerry Stackhouse was quoted post-game saying that, you know, he looks at Tennessee and they're doing it the right way. They're being taught by the right person, and he really believes that this team is laying the foundation for what a good basketball culture is. And that's kind of something that Admiral Schofield and LaMonte Turner spoke to the team about, you know, after the game, saying this looks very familiar to when we were freshmen, to when we were sophomores. They're going through the growing pains as the transition. I mean, you see what Rick Barnes did with Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield from their freshman and sophomore years all the way up to their junior and senior careers in terms of Admiral Schofield. Just the transition of both their bodies and their game, and you're kind of seeing that now with John Fulkerson. You're seeing that now with E. Pons, and so it's certainly a reloading year for Tennessee, a rebuilding year for Tennessee, because you're trying to go back and teach those basics, and hopefully for the years to come, you'll reap the fruits of the labor. So that's kind of what Admiral Schofield and LaMonte Turner talked to the team about last night. I thought that was kind of neat. Schofield was honored during the game and up to a standing ovation during the as he was back in town for the NBA All-Star game, and so I thought that was a pretty neat thing to see as well. One more note I will say, Santiago Vescovi post-game said, this is the first time I've ever seen Rick Barnes mad after a win. And but I understand why, because we continue to turn the ball over. I continue to have silly turnovers. So I get it, but I've never seen him mad like this after the game. And he was certainly mad after the game. He was mad at halftime with an interview with the SEC Network's Alyssa Lang saying, we don't have a respect for the game. Some of these passes, it's just pathetic. And so Rick Barnes, not the happiest of people last night, but certainly a little bit happier than with getting the win than he would at Tennessee were to get the loss. But Tennessee does pull out a 4-point win, 65-61 over Vanderbilt. And as you mentioned, Jimmy, tough stretch ahead starts with Auburn on Saturday. This UT basketball practice report is brought to you by Pools by Heritage. Get your pool started now, from design to construction to maintenance. One call does it all. Call Pools by Heritage at 947-7527. Or visit online at poolsbyheritage.com. Rick Barnes will meet with the media tomorrow afternoon, right before practice. We'll get audio of that as well and talk about it tomorrow on another UT basketball practice report.
Eric, we sure do appreciate it. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And that, again, is a Tennessee practice report. And we say thank you to listener Ben, who tweets this information, or tweeted it to my attention, that Ross Chastain will fill in for Ryan Newman and drive the number 6 Ford this week for Roush Fenway. So sure to appreciate that, Ben. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the info. We now know who it'll be that'll be behind the wheel for the 6.
Lady Vols softball, they are headed to, boy, they have some nice trips. They're going to Tampa. They got a 5-game slate there, the South Florida Invitational from Friday to Sunday. They will be playing FIU, Florida International, at 11:30 a.m., and then they take on Central Florida at 2 o'clock. That's on Friday. When they went to Mexico, they ended up with two players on the all-tournament team, outfielder Amanda Ayala. She had 4 hits, 3 runs, 3 runs batted in. She is now hitting .458 on the season. And then Kelly Turner has been terrific. She won all 3 games as Tennessee was 3-1 in Mexico. Turner won all 3. She had a 10-strikeout game against Colorado State. She leads the team with a 5-1 record, 2.88 ERA, as Ashley Rogers, the star pitcher from a year ago, is still out with a stress fracture. Not sure when she'll return to the lineup, but they'd love to get her back. But Turner off to a very good start for the Tennessee softball team.
Very much so. Why don't we go ahead and get a break? When we return, we look forward to catching up with Mike Barnett. There's plenty to talk about with him. He'll join us from spring training as he's out there with Cleveland. We'll get a break as Sports Talk continues on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Download the TuneIn app so you can take 99.1 The Sports Animal with you wherever you go.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and it is a pleasure, an absolute pleasure, to be joined on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline by our good friend, former Tennessee assistant, longtime staffer with the Cleveland Indians. He's out in spring training now, Mike Barnett. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, John. Jimmy, good talking to you guys.
Well, great to talk to you, and I don't think there's any question that we'll find out whether or not all publicity is good publicity, but there's a lot of conversation swirling about Major League Baseball, and a lot of it has to do with the Houston Astros. Mike, to see this unfold the way it has, what has been your reaction first to what we saw as the punishment handed down from Major League Baseball to the franchise?
Well, it's something, you know, that was going on for a couple years, and we had a pretty good idea of how things were happening and what was going on. And Major League Baseball just kind of kept coming back and saying that they did not find anything. They couldn't find anything happening. And, you know, we got a little bit frustrated with it because we knew it was happening. And when Mike Fiers came out and made the statements that they were cheating in 17 when they won the World Series, I think Major League Baseball said, oh, okay, yeah, there really is something there. And to me, I had talked to some people beforehand, and I thought that just mentioned what I thought should be a, you know, fair punishment, and really Lou Now, the general manager, and A.J. Hinch should be suspended for a year, and that they should at least lose first-round picks for the next 2 years. And they took it a step further and went first and second-round picks for 2 years, and then they fined the Astros $5 million. And I guess, you know, that they felt, you know, kind of the uproar now is the fact that, you know, the penalties are for the front office and the fine by the, but the players aren't getting punished. And I think a lot of, players have certainly spoken out against, that, and there's been quite a bit of frustration. And then there's even been a lawsuit filed by a former, pitcher because, you know, it kind of ruined his career if he had a couple bad outings against the Astros. So it has a lot of ramifications, but I think the initial punishment certainly was fair. And Major League Baseball felt that they had to give immunity to the players to get them to talk, you know, on a candid stage, really.
Mike, do you think the players should have been punished as well? I know they were granted immunity, but and I know you can't take that out of the equation, but do you think they deserve to be punished for participating in this scheme?
Yeah, I really do. I think they should have been punished. But again, to get to the whole bottom of it and to prevent it from happening again, I think Major League Baseball felt that they had to get the complete lowdown from the players participating in it. So they can better police it, monitor it, and know what went on so something like this doesn't happen again.
There have been times when I didn't think the NCAA was thorough in investigating schools because I didn't think they wanted to know. Do you think that Major League Baseball dropped the ball in not investigating the Astros thoroughly enough? Because if you went and asked the manager, I mean, maybe he's going to lie to you. I don't know. But I'm just wondering if they didn't do a thorough enough investigation because they didn't want to believe it happened. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they didn't want to believe it. And, you know, they said they investigated it. I don't want to say that they didn't do enough. Obviously, the digging and everything like that, we basically told them all the stuff that had come out and how they were doing it and what was going on with it. And we kind of got tipped off by one of our pitchers who had a another player. His agent had told them, they both had the same agents who played for the Astros. And he was kind of a guy that was going up and down with the Astros. he was telling the agent this. Well, the agent told one of our pitchers and said, hey, you're going into Houston, be careful because they're stealing signs. And, you know, we relayed all that. And, you know, one of our security guys was really fascinated by it, and he kind of took the lead on it. And, they, you know, but Major League Baseball came back and said, well, we just can't find anything. But when a player of Mike Fiers, you know, who's on that club, comes out and says that, because he had to deal with it pitching against them, you know, the following year in Oakland, then all of a sudden the investigation, you know, kind of got some teeth and got up and running, and they, you know, were able to find out what they were able to find out. And it's too bad it happened. It really is.
Some players, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Just the ramifications of it now, I think Major League Baseball, and Dusty Baker's come out and said it, that he's worried about, you know, guys getting hit. And I think Major League Baseball now is trying to come up with the fact that, you know, there'll be suspensions and big suspensions if the Astros players get hit. And we're kind of going, well, wait a minute. I mean, these guys didn't get punished, and now you're not going to be able to pitch in against them. So actually they're getting rewarded for that. And because there's going to be suspensions on the other side if a club comes in. And I know a lot of pitchers have spoken out about it. So now the Astros are kind of getting to where they don't have to look for the ball in or balls at them, because any pitcher that throws in is automatically going to be suspended. And so something's got to be thought through more with that. Not that I'm going to condone going out and creating beanball wars and everything like that, but they kind of created that mess. But I don't think that they should, you know, be given a blanket that, well, now clubs can't pitch in, or you're going to lose your starting pitcher in the first inning because he throws a fastball up and in, and the umpire deems it that he was trying to hit him.
Well, it's kind of dicey, because from what I've heard and read, not all the Astros participated. So I guess you got to be a little bit concerned about that. But I did want to ask you, some players have come out and said they think the Astros should be stripped of their World Series title. Where do you stand on that, Mike?
Well, it's hard to, for me, as far as a total team, the pitchers on that club obviously weren't participating in the sign stealing. There were players, I think Tony Kemp came out. There were a couple other players that come out and said, you know what, I don't want to know. I don't want to hear anything about it. And it's not like stripping a athlete of a gold medal or something of that nature. To completely change history, what do you do? And then you're just going to put an asterisk by Houston Astros and, you know, well, there's real no world champion that year because of sign stealing. I don't think that's the I think you can lash out and say that, but I think in reality we can't change history.
You mentioned that you had heard things were going on and that they were up to something. Was there similar whispers and or conversations around the Red Sox in 2018?
Not as much, but we kind of, you know, with Alex Cora, and I love Alex, but, you know, with him going over there, and he had been the bench coach the previous year, I mean, we kind of suspected it. But I don't think we saw as much of what we saw with the Astros. I mean, when you've got a guy that's got a tremendous slider and pitchers are just, you know, spitting on it like they're not getting out in front, they're not even offering or anything like that, you kind of go, wait a minute, that's too good of a pitch for a guy not to even kind of half flinch on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we saw that so much with the Red Sox. I think everybody kind of got caught up with the Astros stuff. And the Astros were doing even more stuff in the fact that they were going in with runners at second base. They would get the catcher signs because they're using multiple signs with a runner on second. They would put it in a computer with an algorithm, and it would spit out what signs they were using at second base. So, I mean, it even goes more extensive than just relaying, you know, what pitches were coming. They had it on all ends. And, pretty amazing, pretty but you know, when you're going to do something like that, I think you got to be stupid to not step back and go, hey, we're going to get caught. Somebody's going to come out and say this, and we're going to get caught. And I'm just glad it eventually happened, for sure.
In the report by The Athletic, they said that the first team that used a replay room to break down sequences and signs was the Yankees, perhaps as early as 2015. And I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. you don't have to go down the list, but are there a number of teams that you've encountered over the years that you think, okay, we got to be careful, we got to change up our sequence, our signs? How much of that do you think goes on?
Oh, I think it goes on a tremendous amount. And you've constantly got to be switching up your signs at second base, and I think every team is trying to do that. Now, if you're going in and you're watching a certain pitcher on, you know, his previous start, and you can pick up what signs they're using at second base, I don't have any problem with that. That's okay,
mm-hmm.
because that's just doing your homework. But when you're doing it in the middle of a game, and again, like you're using – a computer to, you know, to decipher the signs with an algorithm, I think that's taken a little bit far.
Yeah.
And that, and the Red Sox, like I said, I mean, we always know that they're good at, you know, picking up pitchers, tipping pitches, and trying to steal signs at second base. The Yankees have always been a notorious club for doing that. But, no, we never saw anything that was like what the Astros were doing. It was pretty amazing. And if you sit there, we watched it about, I was in Cleveland probably about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and we pulled up some of Beltran's at bats. And so basically what they were doing is, if you didn't hear a bang on the trash can, you were getting a fastball. If you heard one bang on the trash can, it was a breaking ball. And if you heard two bangs, it was a changeup. And it was plain as day. You could hear it over the crowd mic, and we watched probably 15, 20 at-bats, and every pitch it was right on.
Wow.
So, you know, the Astros really haven't handled it well, and I don't know how you handle it well, but Jim Crane can't come out and say, well, I don't think it really affected the outcome of games. It affected the outcome of games tremendously. And, you know, when you're up there and these guys are that good and they know what pitches are coming, it's going to make it tough to beat them. That's for sure.
Our guest is Cleveland replay coordinator Mike Barnett, former Tennessee assistant. He joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline. We saw Joe Musgrove, a pitcher, say if Major League Baseball took as deep a dive into all ball clubs as it did the Astros, it would not like what it came away with. Do you agree with a sentiment like that, or do you think that's too much of a broad brush?
I think every club probably tries to do some things. I mean, we don't do anything. I know, oh, yeah, you know, holier than now, the Cleveland Indians, but we really haven't. And what they've put in now in the replay room, that's the only live feed that you can have. And we have video room monitors who will sit there behind me, next to me, whatever. And that's the only live feed you can have. So players can't be in there. They can't be behind you. Nobody else can be in there using any kind of communication. So I don't think it's happening, if it is, in the replay rooms anymore. Because even if you go in the clubhouse, you go downstairs where players are watching video after their at-bats, if you're watching the game up there, it's on an 8-second delay. So the only place that you can get a live feed anywhere around our clubhouse, dugout, whatever, is the replay. And they've got that monitored pretty good. We suspected, and the Astros weren't using the replay to do that. They had a dedicated camera that was put in center field. Somebody was probably sitting up in an office somewhere in the ballpark, but not in the clubhouse, and just relaying it down to the bench, and then they would use a trash can to relay a sign.
Wow. Mike, do you think this is worse for baseball than the steroid era?
I really do. Because I think in the initial part of the steroid era, I think guys were just trying to be the best that they could be. And, you know, everybody suspected it and said, oh, well, that's wrong. But there, it wasn't, you weren't going to get penalized, or there was no ramifications for using steroids. They didn't have drug testing for that or anything. And my whole thing on it is, I can't penalize a guy for trying to be the best that he can be and knowing that he can recover quicker and everything like that, because it's such a grueling day-to-day grind. But now, once the testing came in, well, then now throw the book at any guy that gets, you know, test positive, because you know what you're doing and you know that it's wrong. And that's the same thing with this, except I think it's worse, because it's we have a meeting on it every spring, and it's you cannot use technology to gain an advantage during a game. And they knew what they were doing. They knew it was wrong, and they didn't care. And they had a distinct advantage in a lot of games, especially at home with that, you know, that type of setup that they had.
They must not have used it last year against Washington. They didn't win a home game in the World Series.
No, they didn't. And we don't know. I haven't heard. Okay, it was definitely 17, 18, 19. I don't know if they were using it last year. But those guys don't need it. I mean, but I guess they got the opportunity to use it, and everybody bought in. And, or I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of those guys bought in on that. And sometimes you just got to have a little bit better character and go, no, we can't do that, and I'm not going to do that. Because, and like it would happen, they got caught, and how bad did they look now? And, you know, you worked so hard to win a world championship, and now people talking about wanting to take it away. That's, you know, that's going to haunt those guys forever. They really will, and they should have just thought about it before they acted. That's for sure.
Well, they should have thought about also that you don't keep every player on your roster every year, and so somebody's going to go somewhere else and talk, because they don't want to get beat and by that scheme. That's what's so stupid about it.
Exactly right, because you know eventually down the line you're going to get caught. And so I don't know who absolutely spearheaded it. I mean, I've heard that it was, you know, Alex, you know, Cora, and Beltran was a big part of it. And it sounds great when you can, you know, talk about it and go, hey, let's, but I just can't believe that they didn't think about the ramifications and go, hey, you know, that would be great, but this isn't going to work, because we're going to get caught. So it's going to be interesting as the season goes on and what happens. I know we go into Houston to play them the final two games of spring training, two exhibition games. So I'm sure that will be interesting. And then when the Astros go on the road this year, they are going to get buried by fans and stuff like that. And that kind of takes some of these great players, you know, Springer and Altuve and Correa and Bregman. I mean, these guys, they don't need help. And they're great players. And then to have to go through that, I mean, I think that's fitting. It's part of the punishment as well. And they're just going to have to deal with it.
Do you think having to deal with it will mean the Astros won't be nearly as good this year? Not just because they're not stealing signs, but just because of they're going to hear it everywhere they go. Their fans in the stands on road trips going to hear it everywhere they go. You think that could have really a negative impact on the outcome of their season?
You know what's funny? And like the first part of it we talked about, as far as, you know, Major League Baseball not wanting you to hit them or retaliate in that mm-hmm. manner, well, if they're just going to be able to look away, they don't have to worry about getting being hit, because Major League Baseball is trying to police that. Again, I think that gives them a little bit of an advantage, because they all like to hit the ball up out over the plate. And number two, it might be because they've got a great club. That team is loaded. It's a stacked club. It's a good club. And all that adversity that they're going to go through might galvanize things and band them together even more and go, you know what, it's us against the world now. Let's go and show people we can do this without cheating. So I think I think they're going to be a pretty darn good club, and I don't think that is going to affect them, and in the long run, it may end up helping them.
Mike, we really appreciate your insight into all of this, and we look forward to getting a chance in the near future to talk to you about your ball club. What's it like to be back in camp with Cleveland and some familiar faces now in new places, but how do the Indians look right here at the outset?
Well, right now, things look good. You know, we're just getting through, got through pitcher and catcher camp, and we've got full squad workouts going now, and pitchers throwing live BP, and then Saturday will be a first game against Cincinnati. But right now, our infield looks really strong with four switch hitters, which I think is a plus, in Santana and Hernandez, who we got from the Phillies, Lindor and Ramirez at third base. Behind the plate, we've got Roberto Perez back and Sandy Leon, one of your old buddies, John, from the Red Sox, who will be our backup. And then we got Framil Reyes, who will probably play in the outfield, and DH, who we got in a trade last year from Texas. And the rest of the outfield is kind of up in the air. Mercado is probably going to fit in there somewhere. But then we got about another seven guys where we don't quite know yet, and we're just going to have to play through spring training and see where guys fit best and kind of go from there. Our starting pitching looks fantastic right now. We've got a few guys with a couple little bumps and bruises. You know, Clevinger had a knee procedure done where they had to clean up a meniscus tear. And, you know, some guys are a little bit banged up a little bit, but I think in the long run, we're going to have a tremendous starting rotation, probably as deep as there is, you know, at least in our division. And then our bullpen should be solid with Brad Hand at the back. So, but we've got two great clubs in our division that we got to contend with, and that's Minnesota, and the Chicago White Sox have made a lot of strides too. So you just got to go through spring training, prepare the best you can, and we'll see where everything, you know, ends up slotting out when we start playing games on March 26th against Detroit.
Well, we certainly look forward to catching up with you to talk more about personnel, not just with your organization, but also around the league with new faces and new places. But, Mike, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck to Cleveland, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, John, Jimmy, great talking to you guys, too. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks,
all right,
Mike.
Thank you. That's Mike Barnett, replay coordinator for the Cleveland Indians. We'll get a break. He joins us on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline. A final segment to Sports Talk next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
You know how to pass the time when you're on the job.
With 45 minutes of sports every hour.
99.1
The Sports Animal.
Final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk. No time like now to go ahead and say, hey, you've got a chance to become a qualifier, a finalist for the Coors Light Climb to a Championship. The grand prize winner will be on their way to Nashville for the men's basketball tournament coming up March 11th through the 15th with two all-game passes and $500 spending money. All you have to do is be caller number 5 right now at 656-WINS. That's 656-9467. Caller number 5, you will be qualified for the grand prize drawing, which will be here before you know it, I believe, March 6th.
I don't think I mentioned this earlier. Alabama's hired Charlie Strong as a defensive analyst. Charlie Strong was a head coach at Louisville, head coach at Texas. He's at South Florida, and he is now on the Alabama staff. Also, a rare occurrence last night in college basketball, Division I. Teams down by at least 19 points at halftime this year were 3-378. St. Joseph's was down 40-21 to Davidson last night and won it on a last-second shot. St. Joseph's now 1-12 in conference play.
Wow.
How do you think Davidson feels about that?
Not good at all.
Nope. Tonight we got Auburn playing against Georgia. Georgia's a dangerous team. I would think Auburn would win it, but Georgia can be dangerous. You got Texas A&M going to Alabama and then South Carolina at Mississippi State. I think that may be the best of these games, perhaps. Maybe if Georgia gets hot, that Auburn game would be good. I think South Carolina, Mississippi State will be a good ball game to see who winds up winning that contest in Starkville.
Yeah, I just wonder if if you'll really be able to tell the difference between the garnet and the maroon.
Yeah.
That's 8-4 for South Carolina, 7-5 for Mississippi State. I think that is a really a key matchup. Alabama and A&M, that's a matchup of 6-6 teams. Tennessee was tied with them prior to last night's game. So that is one that will dictate perhaps who winds up seated where. And then, like you said, Auburn, this is a big rivalry just for the fact that it carries over from football and the oldest rivalry in the South.
Well, Georgia's got one of the best players in the league in the Edwards kid, and they've got another couple of other players that are decent role players that if mm-hmm. they play well, they could give Auburn fits. Auburn had a game early this year where they were just awful shooting threes, and they will shoot a lot of threes, so if they have a cold night, Georgia might be able to get them. Two teams I thought would be better this year that have kind of tailed off, I thought Alabama would be better. I thought Arkansas would be better.
Yes.
Arkansas is, what, 4-9 in conference play?
Correct.
Yeah, I thought that they would have a better team than that. I didn't gauge that one correctly, but
I think Alabama's right there, just for the fact that just posted that win over LSU, and we'll see if they can follow it up by taking advantage of the home floor tonight. But that's going to do it for today's edition of Sports Talk. We'll be right back with you tomorrow afternoon. A lot coming your way on the Thursday edition. Have a good night, everybody.